Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
The Dr. Supercoach podcast is powered by Code Sports. You can find our weekly articles at codesports.com.au.
Welcome back to another Dr. Supercoach podcast. You're on this week with Pistol. Welcome to the podcast, Pig.
Hey, Pistol, we've got another 5Ps episode. Pistol and Pig, proper podcast.
It's too much.
Yeah.
It's too much. Way too hard. Can't start with a tongue twister. All right, before we get into the podcast, there is just, I guess, breaking news going around. I'm not sure it's been 100% confirmed. I think it was Tom Morris that said on Channel 9 that Sean Darcy is out for 6 to 8 weeks. Does this change your side at all, Pig?
Yeah, it has. Like looking at the Freo fixture, I was pretty adamant that if Sean Darcy was going to be out kind of 1 to 4 rounds, I'm not going to say weeks because we're going to say rounds because, you know, the surgery happened a week before the season. If he was out 1 to 4, I wasn't that interested. But if Luke Jackson's going to be solo rucking in rounds 5 and 6, where he has Port and West Coast, I can't remember exactly what order, but he has those two, essentially the two easiest teams for ruckman to score against. Plus, he can cover the Gorn and Grundy buys. That interests me very, very much. Jackson scored 100, average 118 without Darcy last year. That is buoyed by a big one huge game against Brisbane where he was just against Darcy Fort. So you can maybe scale that back a bit, but I think at 547k, he's still got potential to make a lot of money. And if he can cover, if he can still be there rounds 5 and 6 to cover those Gorn and Grundy buyers with a R3 loophole, yeah, I'm very interested.
So am I. I think at that price, if it's for, you know, 5+ weeks, you can afford to use him to get through the buys and then just reassess. I mean, Sean Darcy has been injury prone for pretty much his whole career. So who knows how he'll go in that recovery. It might take longer, it might take less, he might get re-injured, whatever it might be. I think it's one that you just put in and you play by ear. And, you know, if you cash out at 600K, you probably are still, I mean, happy enough if it gets you English or whatever you want to do, and you avoid, you know, some of those buys with Gorn and Grundy. My team structure is gone all over the place because of it, but I think it's enough time that Darcy's missing that Luke Jackson's going to end up in my side now. Pig, right before we go through round 0, I should say we're not going to usually go through game by game, but given there was only 4 of them, I figured we may as well. I'll quickly go through the new patron members in March. So shout outs to Leah Chamberlain, Will Elvey, Michael Heeslip, Beck Taylor, Daniel, Greg Hamilton again. Welcome back, Greg. Kevin Stark, Pedro Schusen, Sammy Litz, Liam Saylor, Nelson Ho, David Swan, and Dan Nevent. I don't know if I got 50% of those names correct, but I tried my best. Hopefully, didn't let anyone down.
Sounded all right to me.
Well, the names weren't in front of you, so you'll never know. all right, Pig, I think round one, first game of the week, Swans versus Demons. Do you want to take us through your, I guess, key points?
Yeah, round zero, not round one.
Sorry, you're right. Round zero. Oof, that's going to be hard to get used to.
I hope this doesn't continue every year for Supercoach's sake, but also we got some free looks at some players. I think there was some, you know, maybe some traps that people avoided, or there's now maybe even more traps popping up. Who knows? But there's some players that it probably does help because we get a good look and you get this score baked into their price rise. So there are some players that have, you know, popped off that we think we may not have started before, but when they've got a big score in their initial price rise, we might as well ride them for a few weeks, potentially. I'll start at the top of the Supercoach tree, and that was Isaac Heaney with a 144. To the eye test, he was incredible. Like, he's been rumoured for years to be moving into the midfield, and it never happens, and it's just a tease all the time. I can see it, you know, without Mills, Parker and Adams. Is it going to happen full-time, at least until, say, their bye? It looks like Parker and Adams are targeting to come back around that kind of round five, bye for round six, maybe. And with a 144 backed into Heaney's price rises, he could be well on his way to making 100K by that time, and you could even trade him out before your bye if you wanted. But he was incredible. I know you're quite keen on him. What are your thoughts on Isaac?
Isaac has typically been a super coach trap for a lot of his career, mostly due to him getting hot and cold. And, you know, you trade him in at the end of a hot streak and then he goes cold or he gets injured. I'm looking at the fixtures, and after Collingwood, Swans play Essendon, Richmond, West Coast, Gold Coast, Hawthorn in a row. It's very, very good. It almost couldn't be scripted to be better than that.
It can't get much better than that, especially after we saw what from Richmond on the weekend, and we know what some of those other teams you mentioned are like in previous years.
I mean, if he had North Melbourne in that run, it would be almost a bingo for all the teams that you want to have. So I know I'm not expecting 144, and I think it's the midfield role that people are like, well, Horse said we're going to use him wherever we need him, and I understand that, and I don't necessarily expect him to remain at 50%+ CBAs for all of those games, but if he's resting forward against some of those teams, that's huge.
Yeah.
Like, he's still going to score well in games that Swans, you know, do really well. Heaney, over the last 60 games, has such a high split of scores, scoring higher in wins than losses. It's about 20 points more in wins than losses across a massive scale, you know, a sample size. So I, across that run, back Heaney to score really well and get, you know, hopefully me off to an absolute flyer. So I understand he could get injured, and that's kind of the risk that you take. But I don't actually have too much concerns over his score, because his role might not matter very much because the fixtures are just so good.
So if you were starting Heaney, are you starting him thinking he could be a season-long keeper, or are you thinking about flipping him before his bye? Or?
I think you've got to be fluid with 40 trades and see what happens. I would be picking Heaney specifically to try and keep him the whole season, because he can, you know, get really hot, and if he's starting seven games in a row really well, then there might not be any reason for him to slow down. I mean, maybe Mills comes back. Mills might come back through the back line. Who knows?
Yeah.
I think with 40 trades, you get to play a lot of this by ear. So I'm going to take the hot hand, I think, and roll with Heaney. I mean, 144 is huge. So his price will probably, you know, get up to stupid levels very quickly,
yep.
Which means if you're not starting him, you're kind of committing to not get him because his price is going to just, it's going to be worse and worse value the longer you wait in that, you know, early fixture time period.
Yeah, I think I'm personally seeing him as a quick 100K, and if he's still going at over 100 or something, I might just hold on to him.
Yeah.
I will say my philosophy is, I think, and this maybe we've been talking about doing another podcast about mid prices, and I'd probably put him into that slightly under, you know, nearly mid price category. I think my philosophy has changed a little bit about them, where I'd be happy just for someone on field scoring 100, making me 100K, and then I can flip them with these extra trades.
Yeah.
So happy to talk about that philosophy a bit more in a different podcast, but Heaney fits that mold for me that could make me quick cash, could score me well on field. And if I don't have any fixed up trades around that time, and it looks like the other guys are coming back to take his spot, you know, he could be my pathway to an English or a Bont or something.
Yeah, well, speaking of Ruckman, Brody Grundy truly was the star of this match. 139 Supercoach points. For anyone that had a slight hint of doubt, which I think may have been both of us.
Me and you were both talking about how we could fade him and who else we could get, and he shut us up.
You can't go past him after that. That was an exclamation point where it's like, okay, there's no coming back from not selecting him.
Yep.
With that ruck run we spoke about, it's a bit tougher as a ruck, but they'll win a lot more of the pie. And to be honest, if Grundy is playing like how he played against Gorn, he's not losing many ruck battles this year. So big block, not thinking twice about that. Did any of the other, I guess, premium... Well, I shouldn't say premium, but top scores for the Swans spark any interest in you?
Not for Classic, necessarily. I did put out a video earlier in the year calling for a Chad Warner breakout, and he started this game pretty slowly and then worked into it and ended up scoring 118. So those that got him in draft, I think, are pretty happy, and I still... like. I think he could be a 105-plus mid quite comfortably. Not for... I wouldn't be starting him in Classic, though, because you'll probably have Grundy on that same buy, maybe Heaney, maybe Dacos, and he's probably the lower priority of all those. What other premiums we've got? Gulden. I wasn't really interested in Gulden anyway, just because I had Dacos and I was probably going to have to get Grundy. And you and I were trying to stick with a one premium per early buy rule. I think Grundy's... Tried. Thrown that in our face because we've both been really keen on Dacos. Now I think we have to get Grundy and also Heaney.
yeah, it's too many for one buy, but we're going to close our eyes and just hope for the best, I think.
Stick our fingers in our ears and just wing it. So yeah, Gordon, with that 77 baked in, he's a chance to lose cash. So I wouldn't be going near him. Jordan, I guess mid-pricery, he absolutely did enough. He actually started really slowly. He had a very poor first quarter and still managed to get 81, which would see him making a lot of money. So
He scored 70 in the second and third combined and then basically nothing in the first and fourth.
Yeah, right. So it looked like from what I saw in the first quarter, he was essentially just saving his score with tackles. And then in the second, third, he started getting disposals as well. And you and I have talked about this before. SCG can be weird for wingers. There's usually one side that scores well and one that doesn't. We've seen this with McInerney and Goulden in other years. One will have a hot quarter and the other will be dead. So that could happen with Jordan from time to time if he's in the wing, but he's still... I think he's very much talented enough and good enough to easily make us 150-plus K.
I was just a bit upset that he had the second lowest time on ground outside of the subbed set of players. So they only used him at 71%. I'm hoping, you know, with this easy fixture run coming up ahead, you know, when they don't have to fight tooth and nail all the way to the end of the match, maybe they rest some of their very important players and he might get a bit more game time. But I saw enough from Jordan and that tackling will keep his floor really high. that I am still content with that selection. So he didn't really move anyway. I did like Blakey. I mean, Blakey's just such an amazing player. You can't pick him because of bye, but at some stage, if he were to break out, I would not flinch. I would not be surprised at all. So on the rookie front for the Swans, before we move on, Matt Roberts played in the back line. They moved Jake Lloyd up to facilitate, which just screams good job security for Roberts. He played his role very well, looked good. He took kickouts as well. There's absolutely no reason not to pick Roberts. I think he's probably he's currently on my bench. I think you would get away with being able to field him, should score well enough with that kickouts keeping his floor a little bit high, and he'll get defensive status in the future. So there's no one's going to argue with the Roberts selection.
I think he should be in everyone's teams, and if you wanted him as M8, that's fine. I've got him on my M9 on the bench. But yeah, he led Sydney for kickouts. He had the most kickouts for Sydney, and he played on from all of them. So that just boosts his floor again. So yeah, pick him.
And on the other team, the rookies were a totally different story. We had Bailey Laurie not look particularly great and be subbed out. Basically early in the third, and he only scored 20 Supercoach points. Billings, who started the sub, so some people got bailed out of, I guess, falling for the trap, as they say. He was the sub and came on and still only scored 11 points. And Shaki, that I don't think many people are considering him, with 27. And it was Windsor that probably scored well enough to not scare you off him, but also not enough to demand you put him into the side. He scored 58 points. I wasn't overly impressed with Windsor, but the SCG, it is hard for wingers, which we've pointed out plenty of times before, so I'll give him some grace. I think when they change to the MCG, it might go a lot better for him.
I think,
is he in your side?
He is, only because I've got spare cash. He's actually sitting on my bench. Him and Lazaro, like Lazaro's on field, he's on the bench. It might just kind of be alternating who's on field depending on the matchup and the ground kind of thing.
Yeah.
If I needed to find an extra 60K, I'd be pretty comfortable culling him and going someone else, because I don't think he's must-have, but I am someone that I like to pay up for my rookie's job security, whereas I think he's pretty locked into that team. If I culled him down to, say, a Harvey Thomas, yeah, I could make 60K, but I'm not 100% guaranteed that Thomas is going to be there in 4 weeks.
Yeah.
But, you know, if I need 60K for a last minute, you know, someone doesn't get named and I need to switch, Windsor's on the chopping block if needed, but he's in my team.
I think if Windsor had four performances like this, he probably ends up starting as a sub in, you know, game five. It really wasn't like a super inspiring performance, but again, they lost and... I can't say Melbourne looked particularly great. So, yeah.
And I do think his home ground, where he'll play a lot of games at the MCG, will be better for his type of role.
Absolutely. The ground did benefit Blake Howes, though, who was probably the surprise pack. I don't think he was in many people as a defensive 123K rookie. I don't think Blake Howes started in many people's teams, but he's probably in everyone's teams now, scoring 91, which will just give him sort of a massive cash rise in his first price rise. Given Jake Bowie got injured, it just means that his job security now house is through the roof. So he also becomes a must select going into round one.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think just based on what we saw with them chipping it around a bit, they were not averse to getting it in his hands as well when he had 7 marks. So maybe even be able to field him. Based on the 91, if you wanted it. Like, I think between him, Gibkiss and Reid, who are kind of my last three defender rookies, I could probably play a bit of roulette of who goes on field. 7 marks is pretty encouraging.
Ironically, outside of the subbed on and off pair and the injury, Howes had the lowest time on ground for a Melbourne player. So there's probably some upside there as well if they trust him more and start getting that time on ground a little bit higher. It was quite low for a defender, so they may have found one there.
Yeah.
Did any of the Melbourne premiums, I guess, take your fancy?
No, I think it's kind of a, especially with their bye. I've talked before about I think Petrarca's going to be one of the best midfielders in the game, and I'll want him at one stage. But, you know, solid 108, kind of, I'll just wait till after his bye, I think. Viney was incredible, and, you know, why can't he do what Libba did last year? I just, for some reason, I just don't like to pick these kind of players that are so inside-focused and don't get outside as much. And just with Oliver getting back to full time on ground and strength, you know, may eat into Viney a bit, but Viney could be incredible. I just, I don't know. I don't have the guts for it or the need for it.
Yeah. I watched Viney in the week before in the match team, and he was equally as good. He's now put together two ridiculously good performances. He feels like a draft pick, and I'm only saying that really because he is the early buy, and I know he hasn't done it before. And I mean, we say who breaks out at 30, but I guess Libba did. Yep. And it does feel like he could have a Libba type season. But again, we've seen a big round one or round zero for Viney before with a, you know, 180 plus, and that was the end of that. I don't remember how that rest of the story went big. I think some people got burned. So it's not...
You sound haunted.
It's not... it feels like a little bit too much risk, or just playing a little bit too cute, knowing they also have the early buy, and he's not cheap enough that he's going to get a big price rise out of it. So I'd stay away. And the same, Oliver just didn't look up to his usual scratch. No problem finding the football, but the score will come for him. We'll just need to pick the timing. What did you make of Gorn? I mean, he scored 72. I think there's some people that are quite scared or jumping off.
Nah, I'm totally fine with Gorn. Last week, I think before these games, you and I were saying, or in our premium podcast, we were saying Gorn was more of a lock than Grundy, and Gorn was one everyone needed. Yeah. I think they're both locks. Like, I think Gorn, I think he actually had a pretty good first half. He might have been on 55 or 60.
And then I just think it was in mid-60s.
Yeah, and then went absolutely missing. As like, Grundy had a great technique that kind of limited him. Gorn still had more hit-outs. But Gorn, I think, is one of the best, might have been second or third of contested possessions per game last year, kind of as an average, like including all midfielders and everything. So that's probably where he let himself down a bit there. He didn't really do that. He didn't get around the ground for his marks. Was pretty slippery, and there were some that went through his hands that didn't quite hit him. I just think he'll be better. I've got a bit of a thing where, especially with a team's captain, if they have a bad game and their team loses, I'm really looking at them next week and how they bounce back. And usually the good captains, and you can kind of tell from their attitude, will have a big game. There was twice I captained Merritt after he had a stinker and Bombers lost, and then Bont when he had a stinker and Bulldogs lost. And they both came back with 130s the next week. And I've got a feeling Gorn's going to do that next week against Tim English, who gives up a lot of points to Ruckman. Yeah, Gorn's hurt his break even a bit here, but I think he could go 130 next week and kind of be back to neutral ground and have a break even right around his price and then continue his upward movement.
So the thing that was interesting about Gorn in this game was typically Gorn doesn't ruck in his forward 50. He stands one kick behind on about the 50-meter arc so that if there's a dump kick out of the forward 50 ball up area, he can intercept it. And that's a play that they've utilized for most of last year. And that works when they have a second ruck in the side or a capable second ruck in the side. And Shaki was getting absolutely destroyed in the ruck by anyone, especially Grundy, that they couldn't do it anymore. And they actually stopped trying to put Shaki in those forward 50 ruck contests. So Gorn rucked inside forward 50 after the first couple times went so poorly for them. So then Gorn missed out on those opportunities to take those intercept marks from those dump kicks. So it's going to be, I think that does limit his scoring somewhat.
Yep.
I'm still expecting him to be a keeper. He hasn't moved from my side. I do agree. I think he bounces back against English, and we've pointed out before how good his ruck run is. So I have no real long-term worries, but I think it does harm, you know, if it's a difference between 120 average and 115 average, that might be it. But I'm still going to be happy at the end of the day, but it is noticeable if he has to ruck inside the forward 50 rather than standing, you know, a kick behind the ball in those situations.
Yeah, I didn't quite pick up on that, so that's an astute observation, Pistol.
that's why they get me on the podcast.
One of the things I'd question with that, like, they could easily drop Shaqie, and maybe they probably should.
I would guess so. But I don't think he's coming next week.
Last year when Grundy didn't play, so when it was just Max, Van Ruin was always their backup ruckman, and so he'd take those forward 50 things and or he'd ruck when Max was on the bench. So I wonder if they go back to Van Ruin or if they're actually trying to keep him out of the ruck contest so he can play fully as a forward. That's probably something to keep an eye on as well, because
yeah,
he was their number two guy for ruck contest last year. So,
alrighty.
Let's move on.
Let's keep it hot. I think the most exciting game of the round, Lions versus Blues. I don't know why I'm saying it like that. Carlton versus Brisbane. What were your main takeaways from this game?
I think neither of these teams have very many Supercoach relevant players because they had the round two bye.
Yep.
I've been on record saying I think Josh Dunkley's going to have a big year, and I think he's pretty comfortably a top 10 mid. He's got like 5 marks, 9 tackles, 21 disposals. He kind of fills the box score everywhere. He only had 101 in this game, so I'll just pick him up cheaper after his bye at some stage. But a bit like Petrarca, I think Dunkley is someone that I want in my team personally. Neil, I'm not that bust on this year, potentially. Jared Lyons could be an interesting kind of in that 200k cash cow range, like a Riley Bonner or a Sam Berry or a Zach Williams kind of type. I wouldn't do it now because he has the buy and you can purchase him after his buy and he won't have had a price movement.
Yeah.
If he comes out with another 100, I don't know what his break even will look like. It might look like minus 500. Exaggeration. But he could be a pretty easy flick switch after his buy. He's always a bit of a sub risk though.
I think that's my biggest problem is at first I put him in my side, you know, after the game. And then the longer that the week progressed, I was like, you know, I know McKenna's going to come in for Coleman, which was a devastating injury, by the way.
Yeah.
And then you still have Dev Rob to come back. And then I'm looking at their side and I'm like, who then becomes a sub? I'm like, there's a couple it could be, but very well could just go back to Lions. And I know he played really well. And the risk is probably worth the reward, to be honest. But when I have other players in that price range, like Fife or Jordan Uwe in my midfield, I'm like, maybe I just start with them and do a corrective transfer. You know, if he plays in round three, the first game of the round. Yeah. So that just means we should know, we'll definitely know if he's a sub going into round three. So if he avoids a sub in round two, we'll know if he's a sub or not in round three. And then be able to take advantage of that cash gen if he does score well again. Kind of feels like a little bit of a safer route. So,
yeah,
that's less high risk, high reward, but I don't think I'm going to rock that one.
He has Freo in round one, who last year, from memory, were quite a easy midfield matchup. So, you know, he could come out and have another very good score. And then we just kind of, like say, corrective trade after his bye. Maybe it's Fife has had been vested twice or something, like I wouldn't be surprised in, and he's not going to make you money and you go to Lions or whatever it looks like. I wouldn't buy him now, but I'm definitely earmarking for after the bye if he has another ton or near ton.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And in the Carlton side, there's not too much going on. We saw Jack Carroll come in and have, I think it was a 58 point third quarter once he was subbed in for Doherty's poor ACL, another bad injury. So Carroll is somebody that you could probably pop on as M11, but, you know, Walsh is going to come back into that side and seems like it would probably be Carroll's role, just given Carroll came in and he almost didn't miss a CBA for the rest of the game once he was in. So his role was really, really good. But that's probably helped by Cripps taking a knock, Kennedy having a really poor game. Just some things went his way. I think it's fine to put him at M11, but as well, could just be one of those corrective trades. Why don't we just wait and see if his name's round three and what if he's a sub or not before we put him in.
I think that's a much better idea. Yeah, and I'll be honest, I don't know much about him or where he's come from or what his prior scoring history is like. So if he has another good score this round, I might do a bit of digging and then just see if he's named round three and we could correct his trade. Zach Woons is the one that I'm keen on. He's pretty much never left my side all preseason. He's kind of been there as a placeholder that I always wanted, this kind of 200K price range guy, whether it was him, Thompson Dow, Massimo. And I think Zach Williams has earned the spot in my team, especially with his first half. He was really great. He did drop off towards the second half of the game, but when you haven't played in 18 months, I'm not surprised by that. He could be a vest out risk if they didn't have the Doherty injury, I think. But the fact he got through unscathed was very heartening, and I'm pretty happy to have Z Will in my back line.
He did have 80% time on ground, so it wasn't like he was heavily restricted. It'll be interesting to see how they use him next game if there's no injury. But I was very impressed. He took some kickouts. He looked really good, to be honest. Yeah. I put him back in my side. I think it's pending injury, because that's the biggest risk. It should be an easy 100K plus with really high upside as well.
Yeah.
So I also was very, very comfortable having him in my side.
I think there's a few of these guys that are kind of high upside but high injury risk. Like I'm talking about Zach Williams, Elliot Yeo, Nat Fyfe. There's probably a few I'm missing that are... You probably don't want them all. But Zach Fisher maybe as well. You probably don't want them all. And if you are, you might be tempting fate a little bit. But I'd be pretty comfortable having two of them, for example. And then if they get injured, you know, in the same week, which could happen, you'd probably deal with it. So at the moment, like Z Will and Fisher, I'm happy to take on, and Fyfe and Yeo I'm avoiding, for example.
Yeah. No, I can understand that. I think, yeah, it's, you got to look at your whole team in its entirety to look at the risk profile and pull some out if it's too much. But again, you can argue with best 18 and 40 trades that we might be able to take a little bit more risk than usual as well. So many ways to play the game, and I don't know what's right.
We'll
figure that out together. Yeah,
I think especially with all these middle buyers and best 18, we've never had it before for this many rounds. So we won't know the answer potentially until after the season.
Yep, no, we'll definitely learn from it. I think the only other guy in this match that maybe made me have a slight eyebrow raise was George Hewitt. He's 440K as a midfielder. I know like Wines is 460 and Hewitt already has 106 baked in. I don't know why I said baked. I think it's because you said it so many times earlier in the podcast. It's in my mind now. He has that already in his score, so that's good for price rises. And he has the past scoring history where he can go in that 105 to 110 range. And with their midfield looking a bit battered, Doherty out now, Walsh, who knows really how he's going to come back from that back injury. I think the role will be quite good for Hewitt, but he might end up having to be a downgrade after his buy option. But I genuinely think we could be getting to round three off his buy. He's had, you know, back-to-back tons, and it's just an easy trade-in.
Yeah, I agree. I think he's a wait-and-see. Who do they have first up round one? Oh, Richmond. So that could be huge if Richmond or anything like last week. So, yeah, he could have another ton. And it could be, let's say, Wines comes out and gives you 370s or something. Unlikely, but yeah, it could be a correctional trade from one of those mid-prices that hasn't quite worked.
Absolutely. I think it's quite a high chance he has back-to-back tons, and it really makes us think after he finishes his buy.
I've just mentioned Richmond, so I'll just segue on to them and go to the next game.
All right, let's see.
Heard, I'm not going to take credit for this, so sorry to Richmond fans, but I have heard a couple of podcasts call them the Richmond traffic cones based on that last game. A little bit like West Coast were getting the tag last year. I think they are going to be a very super coach friendly matchup for our, especially midfielders and defenders. So we'll see. We need more data. Like, we normally like to look at about 4 weeks of data of something before we start classifying who's easy and who's hard to play against. But just by the eye test, giving up, I think it was 11 goals in a row or something. I think they could be an easy matchup, and yeah, an easy segue to talk about the Gold Coast midfielders and defenders just feasting on them.
Actually, you know, I've now revised. You're going to be very happy with me, Pig. I don't think Bombers will finish in the bottom four anymore.
I've been telling you this for a month.
Because Richmond are going to be in there instead. So yeah. Richmond will finish. So Essendon now, they're fifth last.
Yeah, I'll take that. That's an improvement.
Sorry, should we? I mean, we may as well talk about Richmond. The ball's going to be down the back a lot. And Jaden Short came out with a 130 just from 23 touches. This isn't really too much of a surprise. I think everyone expects him to score quite well. It's just that bye is a bit of a killer.
Yeah.
But I would be very surprised if Short didn't finish inside the top 10 defenders this year.
Yeah, I agree. And I think in some of the projections we've had on Slack and stuff, we've got him averaging about 102. That might be a little bit unders even, just based on how bad they're going to be. JD put out a tweet the other day that he said, what did he say? There could be about 14 defenders that are top six defenders or something like that. And what he meant by that is, last year we had six defenders that went over 105. That was kind of where you need to be a top six defender. And there's generally 14 players probably you could make a case for a defender that could go 105. And Short is one of them. And yeah, he'd be one of my favourites if he didn't have the bye. And if the reason I'm not interested in him is because I am still interested in Max Gawn. And I'm still trying to stick to the one primo per bye apart from Sydney and Collingwood have blown that up, but in the other ones, I'll try and stick to that. And so if you were someone that didn't want Max Gawn and didn't have any other Richmond or Melbourne players, like I wouldn't talk anyone out of Jaden Short. I think he's going to be great.
If it was a no-buy game, he would be my, I think, third select defender this year that I would pick in my back line. Like I think he's really, really good. It's just a shame that we have the buys, so I'd struggle fitting another one into my side. So it's a pass for me, but I wouldn't talk anyone out of it.
Yep. As we go down the list, I'm not really interested in Hopper this year.
I think it's Naismith, right?
Yeah, and he, interestingly enough, he beat Jared Witts in the hit-out battle. He had more hit-outs than Witts, which is very hard to do. Scored a 93. If Nank isn't going to play for a few rounds, I think he would be an amazing cash cow. And we will just wait. We'll know by Wednesday night whether Nank's playing. A lot of the word we are hearing is that Nank probably will be back for round one, which potentially kills the Naismith pick.
Yeah.
We'll just have to see if they want to run. They will run a second ruckman. Last year it was Samson Ryan. Although there were times where they ran Nank and Soldo. So did they do that with Naismith? I think Soldo is a lot better forward than Naismith is
yeah,
what I've heard.
Definitely. I don't think they would run that combination. If it does, do you even want to really pick Naismith? He might score like Luke Ryan. It would be great if he did. But Samson Ryan, you know, got subbed out with 15. That's a hard role for Richmond to play. I'm not sure it would be great. But Does Luke Jackson being in the mix now kill off the Naismith pick? Like, if you're picking Luke Jackson, should you bother selecting Naismith, or should you just be taking that ruck forward swing as your R3 to take advantage of the bye cover?
Yeah, I'd be happy to cull Naismith if you were keen on Jackson, like you and I have said we are, and especially for those to cover Grundy in round 5 and Gawn in round 6. I think you want a loopy-doopy non-playing R3. To be able to then put Jackson into your ruck line in round 5 and 6 to cover those guys.
Yep.
So, yes, I would happily remove Naismith if Nank's playing. Even if Nank's not, but we hear his background too, is still an option, an argument to say still fade Naismith.
Yeah. No. I'm in total agreement with you. If we move further down the list, we had two good rookie scores in this game. We had Josh Kipkus score 76 points. I think at this stage, everyone should probably just lock Kipkus in their side.
I'll agree with that.
He's got the job security. He's got enough scoring potential, you could pepper the 60s and have some spike games. So I'd throw away the key at this point. And the very interesting one was Seth Campbell, 123K forward pocket, kicked 2 goals, 1, and managed to come away with a score of 70 in his first game. I can't say he was someone I was strongly considering at all. I thought he would play, but I didn't think he would be a worthwhile selection. How have you changed your opinion on him? Is he come anywhere near your side?
No, I put him in for a minute, but then I took him out. I really liked what I saw. Like, I watched this game, and he was quite impressive. Even when he wasn't, you know, kicking those 2 goals, he was providing a lot of good pressure. And I'm not sure who they have to come back in that forward line, but he looked like someone that could keep his spot. It's just the scoring.
Maybe Dusty.
That could hurt if a Brownlow medalist wants his position back. But
you can't drop him now.
No, he was really good, and his pressure was one of the best on the team. In a team that got rolled over a bit. So, but scoring potential for a team that we both think will finish bottom four, he's not going to be able to kick 2 goals every game. Yeah, 9 disposals apart from that. I think he's probably one of those like guys that could spit out a 30 or 40, kind of like Alwyn Davey for Essendon last year or someone like that, that has a few spikes, might get up. Yeah. I mean,
Rioli for Richmond might struggle. Yeah. He's probably in that category right now, and he might be the first one out of the side, but it's not a high-scoring role in the team.
He is a good Tassie boy, played for North Launceston, which is my thoughts of the best team in the state. So I've got a little soft spot for him there, but yeah, probably scoring potential Supercoach wise, probably not.
All right, we're going to jump quickly to the Gold Coast Suns. A couple of rookie options. I think Boddy Ulland's scored 41. It's probably a pass on that one.
Yeah.
Thomas Berry scored 62 in only 60% time on ground, 163K forward. To be honest, I don't think anyone's coming to knock him out of that side. So he probably is an option. I don't think he's a particularly great one, but he has some job security, which I know people love. I think if you have an awkward amount of cash left, you might make 100K out of him. I don't think you're making 150, but yeah, it's probably worse options around.
He's like watching him in the game, he kind of plays that half forward lockdown, like defendery, like he was kind of locking down on their rebounding, like Rioli's types. Him and Holman were both kind of doing that job at the same time, I guess.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Yes, they kind of played 2 forwards that were a little bit shut downy. So they may
it's
have
a weird role.
Yeah. And it's a weird one to score into because you're not really hunting the ball. You're kind of just stopping your guy running off and going in the 50. So, yeah, at 160K is a bit elevated as well. I think I'd just rather someone 120K or maybe just find 20K to get to Lazaro or Windsor.
Yeah. I mean, so would I. But I think, like, he still scored. He didn't kick a goal and he scored 62 in 60% time on ground. So there's something there. I don't think I'd do it myself, but
I'd be interested. I guess 3 tackles and 3 marks help, but how you get 62 from only 6 touches is quite impressive.
And one of those is a behind.
Yeah.
So it's really only 5 scoring that, sort of touches.
That kind
so
of looks,
did other things.
Yeah. Seeing 62 from 6 touches makes me think maybe that's not sustainable.
Perhaps not. Sexton, on the other hand, did kind of what we expected. 21 possessions, scored 73. Supercoach didn't use it particularly well, but it's all upside from here. So yep. Sexton should be a lock on everyone's fields.
I agree. No further comment.
All right, we got a big, I guess, discussion to be had on the midfield four. So unlike the preseason game, Gold Coast Suns played a incredibly tight four. In fact, the sum of the four midfielders was all of the CBAs. No one else got a CBA outside of them. So it was Raoul, no surprise, Tuk Miller, Anderson, and Flanders. Firstly, which one of these was the most impressive for you from a Supercoach perspective? And I guess we're going to have to talk about Flanders separately, given his forward status. You know, does he find his way back into your side?
I'd say the most impressive, and I don't know what the votes will look like, but I think Matt Rao was three votes by a long way. He was easily the best player on the ground for me. Like I think he tied an AFL record, 20 disposals, but he was just everywhere.
20 clearances.
20 clearances. Yeah.
I think Paul Salmon had 22, but he came second, which is pretty good.
Oh, I'll take that fact check. Thanks. So Rao was incredible. He was getting so many clearances, like even against kind of Taranto and Hopper hanging off Ingham. He just kind of doing a little bit Bont-like, where tapping it to himself in space, but then able to still go and get it and get the clearance. He also he only had one mark, but he looked a lot better kind of spreading and getting cheaper possessions to me as well, which he hasn't really done in the past. I'm not really looking at Rao as a pick myself. I'm trying to avoid most of these guys just for that round two bye. But Rao was incredible. Anderson did really well, and Tuk, I thought they were all really good. If anyone's got like a real keenness on any of those three midfielders, I wouldn't talk them out of it. I think you just need a nice bench option, like say maybe it's Roberts or someone to cover them in their bye, but I think they'll all be over 100 scorers. I'm pretty confident saying that. But they're all easy. They're all priced over 100. Rao to me is one of those guys that he's always a great contested beast. He needs that outside scoring game to take it to the next level, and I felt like I saw it this game, as well as 20 clearances. I personally love Noah Anderson. I had him in my team last year. I think I traded him in when we went for that 170 and kind of rode him all year. Tuk, I'm really keen on. I might just look at him after his bye. I have been playing with someone around in that 550 range, and it's kind of alternated between Tuk and Newcomb. But now with the Luke Jackson's news, I've kind of gone to him.
Yeah.
So, but Tuk was very much an option for me, and I believe might have been for you as well before this news.
Yeah, Tuk's been in my side for most of the preseason, and now he's Luke Jackson, which is a bit upsetting because I love Tuk, but he didn't do anything wrong. He looked awesome last week. He got 28 touches, 116. He probably felt like he was the least damaging of the midfielders this week and still scored really well. So there's probably some upside still in there. Ironically, Raoul was probably the least appealing from a Supercoach perspective to me. 20 clearances. How much better can you possibly do than 20 clearances?
How sustainable is that?
He scored 137. It wasn't like he scored 170.
Yeah.
So I feel like there's more downside risk with Raoul than the other guys. So he's probably, ironically, the one that I'd stay away from. And probably the biggest surprise is I think Anderson is the guy that if, you know, they had no buys, I would have been tempted to take a punt on Anderson. I feel like his game's just built for Supercoach. He's a really good mix of inside and outside. He can have a lot of possessions, but he still, you know, if he doesn't butcher it, can score really well and really quickly. I wouldn't be surprised if Anderson ends up being the highest scoring Gold Coast mid this year. And it's a shame I can't take him as like this huge POD. So that round three bye just kind of kills it for me. But I would have loved to. I think in my fictional world of no early buys, I think I find Anderson finds his way into my round one team.
Yeah, I'd go even further and say I probably would be surprised if he wasn't the highest scorer. That makes sense. Like
you won up to me.
Yeah, I probably put him above Miller and Rao, just kind of what you've said. He scores inside and out. I think he's going to take it to another level. I think he was around 104 point something, around 105 last year. I'd be pretty confident he goes over 110.
Yeah.
Whereas I'm not going to say that for Took could be around that, but I wouldn't say that for Rao. Even though Rao, this was like a 3-vote game. I'm not sure he replicates it all the time.
So Flanders at 54% CBAs after almost none in the preseason game. Made his way back into my side. I don't think he's like particularly amazing value at his price, but I do think he'll provide a top six scorer and somebody that should may have a tiny bit of, I mean, he's not like amazing, but I think he's like 10, 20K underpriced. So there's like some value in, and given he started with a 124, it's probably going to go up in price.
Yeah.
I think he's found his way into my side for now. I could still remove him before round one. He's probably my least solid pick in my whole side. Did he make his way into your team?
He did for a bit, but he's kind of in this, it's him or Heaney for me. It's not both.
Right.
And at the moment, I've got Heaney in just because I think he makes more cash quicker because Flanders has an early buy. And like I've always thought, you and I talked a bit about it in our Primo podcast where, you know, Flanders for the whole second half of last year went at a 106 average, but he needed like 6.5 marks a game to do that. And we both kind of said, that's not really sustainable. You've got to find your points some other way because no mids really average 6.5 marks. And he got a 124 here from only 4 marks. 3 tackles, I would have liked to see that up a bit, but 26 disposals, he was racking it up. I think quite a bit of that was actually Richmond being bad. I probably saw 5 times he got the ball just from Richmond kicking it to him. so that helps him, and they probably count as intercept possessions.
Yeah, they do. They did.
So there's maybe a little bit of, you know, playing against the Witch's Hat boost here. I definitely don't think he's a 124 average. I think you and I have spoken about he might be, you know, just under a ton average. That maybe could. I'd be happy to increase that a little bit if he's going to be a 50% CBA guy. I think a 50% CBA Flanders is very comfortably a top six forward. So I'd be happy for anyone to start him. I just think I could make money quicker from Heaney and then potentially pivot to Flanders after Flanders' buy and then miss both of their buys is something I'm considering.
Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely, there's a world in which you don't start Flanders and then you take Luke Jackson for sure and you use him to cover the buys and then Darcy comes back and then you just flop,
yeah,
swap Jackson straight to Flanders, and that's like the ultimate points move. I can see that happening.
Flanders in this one also, I think he went at 60-something percent disposal efficiency, and just watching him, he just butchered it a lot. He's got this weird ball drop where he just kicks it so high in the air and often goes to the other team.
Yeah, he did have 6 direct turnovers.
There you go. So that actually capped him. It could have been a bigger score. So maybe that kind of removes the opposition kicking it to him kind of thing because he kicked it back to them.
just kick to kick.
Yeah. Flanders to me didn't like set off my eye test like Heaney did. Heaney, I just looked at him maybe because he's a good looking rooster and I thought I want that in my team. Flanders didn't quite do it for me. But, you know, I think he's a really good pick. He's going to be a top 6 mid and he's got a 124 in his price cycle, so he's going to go up as well. So
yeah, I've got no doubt it's going to be a top forward. So, again, I don't think you're making a wrong move either way,
no.
Selecting or not selecting him there, assuming you've got a way in at some stage. He's still priced pretty expensive, so you'll pay $500K to get him during the year. I'm going to move us on to the Collingwood Giants game, and that's it. Yep, cool. End of podcast. I don't think there's anything to discuss.
Did Collingwood not win?
I don't, what is this feeling?
You went to a showground for livestock.
Our points are lower than the opposition's points. I'm just not really used to this, but yeah, look, Collingwood were pretty useless. It was nice to see Dean get a run. I don't really think he's going to be too much of an option because we got pummeled in the back line. It looked disorganized. We really needed Howe or Murphy back. So I wouldn't be taking Dean after this one. Otherwise, on the Collingwood side, before we get to the big boys, I think there's a couple of people looking at Lipinski because he had a big preseason game and he looked he was one of our best players. I mean, he had 26 touches, didn't use it particularly well, and it's a very low bar when I say one of our best players because we had like two good players for the whole game. I still would stay away. I don't think he's going to be consistent enough, and he probably scores in those high 80s very often. You know, otherwise, Nick Dacos is just next level good. Only 80% time on ground, which is not that high. I assume he didn't do anything to worry you enough that you're going to not select him?
No, he's been in my team all preseason. And when we talk about Tom Green as well, like if you whether you were starting Nick Dacos and Tom Green or whether you were fading them, I feel like a 130 shouldn't change your mind. Like that's what we expected them to do.
Yeah.
But if you had your reason for fading them, I think you should stick with that. If you had your reason for selecting them, I think you should stick with that. So I didn't actually watch this game. I was at my brother's wedding. So congratulations to him.
Yeah, congrats.
But I'm going to have to rely on you a little bit for the eye test in this game. But there are some things in the stats that we can talk about. Like I did hear Nick Dacos had a huge amount of contested possessions and that kind of really boosted him. Otherwise, it might have actually been an average game from him. Some people were saying, and he still managed a 130 even with an average game.
Let me tell you, Nick Dacos, firstly, had 10 clearances.
Yep.
Secondly, he led Collingwood CBAs with 26.
They only had half as many clearances as Rao.
Guess when you put it like that. Dacos was like a full-time midfielder in this game.
Okay.
He didn't rest back. It wasn't the same role as last year where it was like 30% defender and 70% mid, you know, that he had in the latter parts of last season. He was just a midfielder. And also, he's a gun and incredibly good, and he will continually do this pretty much every game because he's just that damn good at football. The way he can kick the ball and hit targets and his vision, like, I know I'm a Collingwood supporter, so I'm obviously going to be in love with Nick Dacos, but he is a special type of player, and to be able to select him, who is a 120-plus upside, you know, midfielder, but be able to select him as a defender is very appealing.
Yeah. Yeah, he's in my team still, and he won't be moving.
I mean, he could get tagged as a full... Like, what? No one really tried to clamp him
mm-hmm.
in this game. So we never really saw the impact of what would happen. Will he rest as a defender if someone moves to him? Possibly. Like, I still think that's on the cards, but it just didn't happen this game, so I can't really judge it. We'll have to wait and see. I'm sure the attention's coming. Although nothing, given Collingwood lost, at least not everyone's talking about him like last season where it was just like, oh, my God, the way to stop Collingwood is to stop Nick Dacos, and then every week it's about how good he is. You know, that will come for sure because he's just that good, but it's not what everyone's focusing on right now, so he might be able to sneak a couple of rounds before getting attention.
Yeah, and he has Sydney round one. I don't think Ryan Clark's in the team or retired or not playing anymore, so he was their tagger. St Kilda have, you know, thrown guys at defensive premiums before. Hawthorn or Port, either side of the bye, are the ones that people are worried about. But, yeah, I'm not too worried. We got spooked by it last year and it barely happened. I'm just happy to back him in, I think.
Darcy Cameron was an absolute jet.
Keen to talk about this because in one of my YouTube breakout videos, I said of all the ruckmen that have never gone 100, I think Darcy Cameron's the most likely to break out and kind of go at that 105 range or more. So when I saw the box score, I was like, oh, hold on, here we go. Is this happening? and it looked like, I'm keen for your thoughts on this, but it looked like he got a lot more ruck time because Mason Cox was really bad.
Yes, that is what happened. Mason Cox was really bad, so Cameron just gobbled up the ruck and was so good. You know, he was good everywhere around. He had 20 disposals and 2 goals.
Yep.
Like it was the full. He was awesome. And then we re-signed him for longer as well. I think we gave him another 2 years or something. So he really had a good week. I think there is a off chance at some stage early that we could drop Cox if that's going to be what we get out of him. The performance was dismal. And if that were to be the case, then, you know, Cameron could go absolutely bonkers. And we've already seen that scoring upside, I guess, from the beginning of the last season. But unfortunately, he doesn't have ruck status this year. Sorry, he does. He doesn't have forward status this year, which makes it a almost non-selection with Grundy and Gawn kind of being locked in. But, I mean, yeah. If you took him over Gawn, you've still got a buy, an early buy. You don't gain anything really from it, so it doesn't really seem viable to me as a plan. But he will be fun to watch, at least, and fun to follow along, especially if you've got him in your draft league.
Yeah, I think anyone that picked him up in draft would be quite happy. He had 30 hitouts to Briggs's 20, and this kind of emphasises, I've been saying a bit, Briggs is quite an easy matchup for opposition ruckman. There's been a few people that have questioned that, like on Twitter, saying, oh, no, Briggs must be awesome because he's a contested beast, but he's not that great at hitouts, so there's a lot of hitouts available. Cameron beat him in the hitouts pretty well, and I don't expect 133 every week, but it was good to see that Cameron, throughout his 2 years of being a main ruckman, kind of gets stuck in that, only taking 55 to 60% of the team's ruck contests, which really limits him, whereas the best ruckman in the league kind of gets 75% of their team splits. And in this game, he had 70%. So this is another game where if he gets over 70% of Collingwood's ruck contest, I think he's easily a 105-plus averager. But that's probably not enough for Classic, really, especially when you've got other options in the ruck line.
Well, speaking of Briggs, he himself had 109 Supercoach. I think it was on 75 at halftime. And then he looked a bit sore. I think he was cramping up a lot towards the end of his game. Do you think he has it in him? I mean, he only played 69% time on ground, so his points per minute were enormous. Do you think he has it in him to challenge the top big guns?
Yeah, I think out of all those kind of, there's a big grouping of rucks that I guess are in that like 105 to 110 range. I'm talking like kind of, well, people expecting Grundy to be there, but guys like Nank and Sean Darcy and Briggs. I think Briggs is the one, and Witts, so we'll put him in that group too. I think Briggs is the one that absolutely could challenge those top guys. And if any of those were to get up to like a 115 average, I think it would be Kieran Briggs, because he kind of has that max scoring game of huge contested possessions. He gets clearances and he gets his hands on the ball at ground level first, and he's okay at the hitouts, like 20 hitouts here, as I said. He's normally a really big tackler too. He had 3, which is okay, but could often have more. Like, he's not a big disposal guy, but what he does is really super coach relevant. So, yeah, 109 in 69% game time is huge. And I think this is 2 games in a row. He's had over 100 in super coach, but only like 60 in fantasy. So that kind of just speaks about what he's really good at, which is super coach gold. But yeah, absolutely. I love him.
So I think we got to see Cadman in the ruck a little bit more, just because Briggs was struggling a little bit in the latter parts of the game. And Cadman didn't do super well as a tap ruck. I'm not sure he actually won a hit out. Yeah, he didn't win any. But again, backup
only
ruck
upside.
Backup ruck, it's going up against Cox is sometimes a bit difficult, but he was okay, I guess, in the contest itself. We saw him have one of his career, I guess, high games in 55 Supercoach. He got 10 touches. I think he did enough to be an F8,
yep,
given we've got West Coast and North Melbourne. He's currently my F8. I mean, that might change, but I think we saw enough positives out of him that you think maybe, just maybe, we can spike a good score in the next 2 games and he can make us some serious money. And he did his job security no harm by performing admirably as well. But before we move on to some of the bigger name players.
Just on Cadman, I think I've been a little bit higher on him than others. And that's just because I really, really value job security in my rookies, and I think he has it. And like you said, 2 juicy fixtures coming up. He could kick a few goals and spike his score. Even if he doesn't, like, there were guys last year like Oscar Allen and Ben King that we didn't really end up selecting, but by the end, by, you know, 10 or 15 rounds in, they had made their 150K at one stage. They're just a lot slower burn than kind of we often want. So I'm not against selecting a key forward if they really have amazing job security, because you can see a few spikes, but backup ruckman gives me a little bit more keenness for Cadman as well. So yeah, Cadman's my F8, and I think I'll be pretty happy with him.
Yep, yep. So on the, I guess, the flow and impact on some of these GWS rookies, Ward got injured. Looks like quite a nasty shoulder injury. The report to the injury report had him listed as 6 to 8 weeks out. And there was also news that Isaac Cumming re-injured his calf and he's out for another 4 to 6 weeks. So the GWS injury list basically has a bunch of people from 4+ weeks out. No one's got, you know, fewer weeks before they return than that. Except Finn Callahan is a test to return this week, and we'll see Harry Perryman likely to come back into the side. So we got two guys that are best 22 definitely coming in, and we have Ward going out, which means one other player probably needs to go out. Probably we'll see Toby McMullen leave the side, which means Mr. Harvey Thomas, who we'd spoken about I think in every podcast so far.
You and I love this guy.
He might survive, and, you know, pending team performance, he might make a pretty penny. He's 117K DPP. I mean, he only had 9 touches and scored 40, but eye test wise was better than, I guess, the Supercoach score dictates. I mean, to be fair, he had 18 Dream Team and scored 40 Supercoach, so maybe it is an accurate reflection of how he played, but I really thought that he was solid enough to not be dropped in an emergency situation that they would have injuries. I would like to see how he goes against West Coast and North Melbourne. I think any forward that's playing considerably high time on ground, he had 82% time on ground, could spike a score in those, and he is basement price almost. You know, 117 is pretty much the cheapest rookie that we can get in Supercoach that's playing. If he's named, which I expect him to be, I think you could do a lot worse than him, to be honest.
Yeah, okay. I like I said, I didn't watch this game, so I've only got the stats, so I'm going to have to trust your eye test. And I do trust it with Thomas, because in those two preseason games, we both said to each other independently, this guy's really good. I think he is someone, and because he's 117, you could probably wait for his two games and then wait for his bye. And then if he's still named after his bye, he would have had one price rise. So he might be up to like 140 or 150K. But if he's kind of got a low break even and going to kind of stay in the team, then I'd probably buy him then. Because, like, I've mentioned a few times this podcast, I'm paying up for job security, and I'm not sure how much he has, so I might just wait a week or two, I think. But if you're really bullish on him, I wouldn't blame you for going.
Well, not bullish, but with the fixtures, I think you can make a pretty penny very quickly, and that might be all you need. You might only need 4 or 5 weeks out of him. And, you know, cash him in for 100K and just call it a day, as you're like, okay, this is the weakest player in my team, I can cash him out.
Yep.
So that's something that I'm at least considering. I like how he makes money earlier. You know, if he is dropped after his bye, he and hasn't been dropped beforehand, you know, he'll be up to 150, 160K, maybe more, pending how he scores, for you to do your correctional trade. So you still... The downside is you still made 50K.
Yeah.
Which might be enough to get you to a different rookie, you know, outside of that bracket. I think it's at least worth talking about. There was players that were worse in the game than him. Like Riccardi scored 3 Supercoach points in 68% time on ground and wasn't subbed out. So I'd say that's quite bad.
Yeah. All right, so...
And Ware probably goes for... Sorry, that's who I was trying to talk about before, for Callahan.
Yeah, well, Ware is playing on a wing from what I've heard, and Callahan also, that's his spot, so
yeah.
I could agree
so
with that.
So that's like a direct sort of swap, and then Ward goes out and Perryman comes in, and Bob's your uncle.
I didn't realize Brett Daniels was back already, because when you and I talked last week, we thought, oh, Daniels is going to be out for a week, so that's great for Thomas's job security.
Yeah, Brett Daniels is such a gun. Like, he's such a good AFL footballer. Not a super coach pick, but like, as an actual footballer, every time I watch him, I'm like, this guy is a jet.
So maybe
people
don't appreciate
how good he is.
Maybe the fact that Thomas played alongside Daniels is good for Thomas as well. Anyway.
Before we get, I guess, to the big guns, is there any merit in someone like Callum Brown, who's 320K, or Hogan, that's 420K?
I actually was going to talk about Hogan, yeah.
Are they worth selecting, knowing they have West Coast and North, or North and West Coast in the next two? Could you do a bit of a buy switcheroo and try and game the system to get an early price rise before everyone else, and then, you know, trade them out for 100K? Is that, you know, a play that you are considering or think is viable?
I'm not considering it at all. I think the more I talk to people on Twitter and Slack, I realize I'm probably in the slightly conservative playing style.
You're more conservative than Chizo. No, probably not.
I think Chizo and I haven't done a podcast yet, but he probably more aligns to my thinking. Yeah, even you're a bit more outgoing than me.
Way more.
Yeah, so I'm not someone that ever would look at doing this kind of switch, but if I was going to, I think Hogan would be my man. If I wanted to ride someone for the price rise he's already got and then two more, with two more easy fixtures, Hogan could easily put out another 2 tons.
Yeah,
and that's probably being pessimistic. He could go even bigger than that. So he's probably
three
the one.
Tons?
2 150s.
Okay, yep.
like what he did to Essendon at the end of last year.
That was the game we were at.
Yeah, that was when I met you in person, and that was the best day and the worst day of my life.
Same, but I didn't go for either of those teams.
Yeah, so if anyone was... People were talking about, like, do you do this switch with Kelly? Do you do it with Tom Green? I'd just do it with Jesse Hogan because I think he's going to kick a bag. He'll probably be leading the Coleman after round whatever it is, 2. If I was doing it, I'd do it with him, but as I said, I'm more conservative than that and I'm not going to do that.
Yep. Nope. That's very fair enough. I don't think you're going to make enough cash. Like, if you could make a quick 100K, I could consider it. I feel like Hogan's 50K too expensive for me to play around with. I mean, Callum Brown's a nicer price, but he's much more of an unknown than Hogan is. So it's probably a pass for me. And unfortunately, Daniels didn't score like 120. Otherwise, I might be game. But
I was just looking at Callum Brown. Like, he didn't have 100 at all last year. I think his high score was 95, and that was an outlier.
Yeah, I mean, he's going to be a really good player. He's still learning.
Oh, he's a physical specimen. He's an awesome player, yeah. But I don't see him putting out another 200s to get that spike.
So is anyone out of, I guess, the Himmelberg, Ash, Kelly or Whitfield gang kind of make you think twice?
Yeah, there's one of them, and it's Whitfield. I've been pretty keen on him for a fair bit of the year, and he's probably my Jaden Short in terms of what you said of if he didn't have the bye, he would be selected for me, I think. He just looks like he's back to the Whitfield of old. 33 disposals and 14 marks is insane. I didn't watch this game, as I said, but that must mean they were looking for him at all opportunities. 137 AFL Fantasy to 108 Supercoach. Does that mean he butchered it a lot?
He got a lot of really cheap possessions. I think that's more the story there. To add context to the 14 marks, I think nearly every single kick out just went to Whitfield. They just like chipped it to him.
Well,
it was like over and over.
Beautiful for Supercoach.
Well, somewhat. I mean, Collingwood had an unnecessarily high amount of behinds. We kicked 16, which against GWS, who I think are going to be probably a top four side this year because they looked that damn good.
Yeah.
I don't think teams are going to be kicking 16 behinds against them too often. So it may have just been a really, really good game for Whitfield. I mean, he had 14 uncontested marks. He had 24 uncontested possessions. He didn't really have to work too hard. We didn't make life very difficult for him. I'm not like the stats flatter Whitfield, I think.
Sure. Oh, that's good context. But yeah, so the other guys you mentioned, Himmelberg, I've never been a big fan of Himmelberg, and maybe that's just because I didn't get on him in that year when he became a premium. So I don't have those rosy colored glasses. But yep. I'll maybe bundle him and Ash up at the same point in saying that, you know, there's these 10 to 14 guys we think could go 105 as a defender, and I don't think those two are them.
Yes.
So why would we select them?
I mean, that's the point. That's the winning point. I think it kills the argument. I don't think Himmelberg makes 100K, and if he does, he still has an early buy, so it kind of offsets the... You lose some points there while you're making some money. I think maybe I'd be more comfortable, I guess, going him than Ash, but I'm kind of annoyed that this is the Ash that I started with last year. This is why I bought him. I was like, okay.
Oh, I did too. This guy can score well. I forgot I started him, and then, yeah, that brings back memories that I tried to bury.
He looks so good. I'm like, oh man, this is why we bought you for this role, the same role. Like, everything was the same, except he just scored terribly last season. And this year, he looked incredible.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm a Lachie Ash fan. I've got him in a keeper league, and I think he's great. But in for Classic, I don't think he's a 105 defender, so there's a lot better options. Yeah, like I said, Whitfield I would be very keen on if he didn't have a buy, but he does, so I won't.
Yeah.
There's a big green elephant in the room.
All right.
You and I are so keen on Tom Green, aren't we? And we both had him in and out of our team so much, but then we keep removing it. Actually, there's been about three podcasts we've done where one of us has had him in the team, and then throughout the podcast we talk about him and we convince the person to remove them.
I can't do it. Like, I want to do it so badly. I've started him many years in a row, and he's so good. He's such a good player. But having two buys before some of these players have a single buy, just I can't get that out of my head. Like, it's too big of a hurdle, and it's going to kill me watching him go, you know, 130, 130, 130. Like, he's definitely going to start hot, and then I'm not going to have him. I'm going to be sad. Then he's going to have his bye, and then I'll feel a little bit better, and then he'll continue pumping out these 110s, 115s, 120s, and I'm going to feel sad again. Then he's going to get to his first bye, and I'll be like, finally, it wasn't too bad, and I can just buy him, and that's probably going to be my life story.
Buy him, but maybe at 700K. Who knows?
That's probably.
I'm still in the same boat that I don't think we should start him because he has two buys before. Some have one. Something that's just come into my head as I'm looking at my team now. Now that we think Matt Roberts is a really safe rookie score, potentially could be an 80 kind of average guy. And if he's your bench loop for these two green buys, these two Tom Green on a buy, could that nearly make you want to start Tom Green if you feel like you've got a Robert or a Huswaith kind of sitting there ready to come on for him?
I mean, not two buys, just one buy. Because
the second first one,
round
really.
12-1, you can't really judge what your team will look like. And Roberts also shares the same buy. I think the question, that's been a good question that we've been discussing is, you know, can you kind of structure your side so that you're missing one player or two players per buy, but if you have a really strong bench, you know, if you have Huswaite and Roberts or Clark or something on your midfield bench, can you get away with picking one of those guys? And I don't know is the truth.
Yeah.
I've weighed it up, and rookies are so unpredictable with the scoring. I mean, Roberts right now looks amazing and Lloyd's playing forward. And what if Roberts has two bad games in a row and then Lloyd moves back and Roberts is out of the team or the sub? I mean, it's not out of the question that happens. So I can't plan for that well. And if someone wants to take that risk, go for it. And maybe it'll be really strategic and it'll work really well. But it's not something I can comfortably do, I think, to, you know, actively do to start the season.
Yeah, I think that's fair enough. I was quite against starting Green because of the early buy, when a lot of our calculations at the start of the year was just assuming that you probably have a 50 buy covering, a rookie with a 50 score. you know, there could be an argument made that Roberts is an 80 or an 85, and maybe that score, that covering is okay. I think I'm still... looking at my team, I don't have any premiums in that round two or round three bye, and I'm fairly happy about that. And then those later ones, the round five and six, I've got a few, but there might be a few guys traded out by then. So yeah, just the conservative way I think I'm leaning towards again is just trying to avoid a lot of them. And yeah, we don't know. It could be the wrong strategy. It could be right. We probably won't know till the end of the year. But
I'm looking forward to finding out, you know, having a review. Even we won't even need to wait that long, but by the buys, the mid-season buys, we'll be able to reflect on the beginning and be like, the best strategy was actually just guns and rookies because it was best 18 and, you know, the rookies didn't matter. Or it will be the opposite where it's like, oh, it was fine to take buy players. Why were we worried about it at all? I don't exactly know how that's going to pan out. I think my balanced approach is probably not going to win me anything. I'm probably playing it a bit too safe. I feel like the person that does the best is the one that fully commits to either strategy, and then them being correct is what will get them off to a fast start.
Yeah.
Awesome.
I've just noticed when I'm looking at Tom Green's fixture, they play at somewhere called NG Stadium. Is that what they've renamed Giant Stadium to now?
Yeah. That's the new name. NG.
I've got a new sponsor.
Yeah. Now, there's a couple of new ones this year. You'll have to get used to looking at all these new stadium names.
Yeah.
Pig, otherwise, before we wrap up, is there anything else that you wanted to discuss?
No, probably not right now. I think covered the Luke Jackson news. We've both said you and I are pretty keen on him. I'm probably going to think about this for the next 4 days, is the Heaney versus Flanders start.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I think I'm pretty settled. Although awesome. News always comes out that throws a spanner in the works. I'm pretty keen. We'll potentially do another podcast, or maybe just me. We'll see how we go, talking about some thoughts about mid prices. And you've got a rookie guide that you've written up. Do you want to mention where people can get that?
That's true. That is true. Yes. Pistols Rookie Review year number 8 is available on our Facebook page, our Patreon page. It is even available as a free unlocked article in Code Sports. Make sure you check that out, as well as any of our other Code Sports articles that we've written this season. They're all linked within that article to the four other ones. We're ensuring we still put out the high quality exclusive code articles weekly throughout the season. So we're very excited about that, and we love doing it. And make sure this is the time to get on board. It's right at the beginning of the season.
Yep, great time to jump on to Dr. Supercoach Patreon, follow our YouTube, Spotify. I know JB is going to be doing live streams on Thursday nights for Patreons. Is that right?
I think it might be for everyone. I'm not exactly sure.
Anyway, I'm sure.
I think it's for everyone. I think he's doing YouTube Thursday night live streams as the plan.
That'll be fun. I could be wrong, but
I think that's what he's doing. But thanks very much for joining me, Pig. I hope everyone enjoyed. I guess it's weird, like the first recap of the season, but the season hasn't started.
Yeah.
Very strange.
First recap, super strange. We can totally change our teams if we want.
It's like we have more than 40 trades. It's because of how many trades have you made during this week? Like 20, 30?
Yeah. And on that, I think one thing that I've done, I'm not sure if you have as well, but a few people have mentioned this, is to actually like clear your team and start from scratch and put in the absolute people you need. So probably start with the rookies, add in who you think are absolute must-haves, and then kind of build it up from there. Because I think when you're kind of watching these games, you like trade this guy for this guy, then this one for this and that for that, and then you kind of go, oh, actually I don't really like that, and don't know how to get back to where you were. I think you can confuse yourself a bit. So yeah, my recommendation would take a screenshot so you've got it in case you panic, but clear your team and start building it again from the ground up with kind of the must-haves, and then see where you end up.
Awesome. No, good advice. All right. Well, thanks very much for joining me, Pig. We'll see you at the conclusion of round 1.